Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Things aren't always as they appear, and some bombshells might be hiding in plain sight. I'm Katie Bilotti, and this is Found Objects, a storytelling history podcast. Welcome in, everyone. Welcome back to Found Objects History Podcast with me, Katie Bilotti. Hope you guys are all doing well. Today's episode is an Olympics-themed history episode. All you need to know about the Olympics past, where it came from, the myths regarding why it's even happening, like why it started and why it's still happening, why it took a hiatus, because there was a long stint of time where there was no Olympics, the crazy events of the 1904 Olympics in St. Louis, there was some tea, some drama that unfolded, some cheating and such that happened at that particular Olympics, and much, much more. We did a deep dive of all of the things you need to know about Olympics history, and that will be today's episode. So I hope you guys really enjoy it. Also, we talk about why a lot of people back in the day in the ancient times were naked when they competed in the Olympic Games. There's a reason for that. I think I'm just going to get right into it because I'm excited to tell you guys these stories and I really don't have much to say about myself. So I think we just get on into it. You know, as they say, it's not a sprint, it's a marathon. And today's episode is going to be a really interesting marathon. All you need to know about ancient Olympics history and just a bunch of fun facts. So stay tuned, listen up, and I hope you guys enjoy this episode. In a matter of days, the 2024 Summer Olympics in Paris will officially begin. It's actually starting on July 26th, 2024, so by the time that this airs in 2 days, this will air on the 24th, and it runs until August 11th, 2024. And honestly, I was surprised to hear this because I always thought, like, I don't know why, I always felt like it lasted longer than this, like just from the 26th of July till August 11th. Like, I feel like that doesn't feel long enough. But anyway, so the world will, of course, be honed in on the 33rd Olympiad. The Olympic Games are held every 4 years, as most of us know, and the Summer and Winter Games alternate every 2 years. And today, the Olympics is kind of this global unity-focused event. I mean, can you really think of another time when the entire world is fixated on the very same thing for over 2 weeks? Now, you could argue that headlines worldwide, you know, are plastered with news of continued things like environmental concerns or, you know, conflicts, wars, things like that. But what about something positive? The world is now coming together to celebrate the achievements of just really athletic people. Like, that is what everyone is focused on. And the Olympics is truly synonymous with tradition, you know, between the opening ceremonies, the medals, the olive branches of it all. But have you ever stopped to consider how all of this started? Like, where did this all come from? How did we all decide to do this, you know, every 4 years? Like, where did this all come from? You know, just at the core of it, where did it all come from? So as we know, the origin of the Olympic Games, like where it all came from, is Greek in nature. It's steeped with Greek mythology and legend, blending history and myth to create this rich tapestry of stories that really explains the beginning of this ancient tradition that we still practice today. According to one legend, the Olympic Games were founded by Zeus, the king of the gods, after he defeated his father Cronus in a battle for control of the universe. And this victory was celebrated with athletic competitions, symbolizing strength and divine honor. Another popular myth attributes the founding of the Olympics to Hercules, a divine hero and the son of Zeus. After completing his 12 labors, Hercules is said to have built the Olympic Stadium and established the games in honor of his father, Zeus. So both of these myths kind of, you know, attribute the Olympics to honoring Zeus in one way or another. So Heracles, in this second myth, marked out the stadium, planted the sacred olive tree from which victors' wreaths are made of, which you notice even today that victors still get olive branches to this day. So they're kind of sticking to the blueprint in that way. And he also initiated the tradition of athletic competitions. So those are two. Then we have another more intricate Greek myth of the origin of the games. Enemas, the king of Pisa, had a daughter named Hippodamia. And according to an oracle, the king would be killed by his daughter's husband. So he kind of, you know, had this premonition via an oracle that this was going to happen to him. So what does he do with this information? He decides, or decrees rather, he literally decrees that any young man who wanted to marry his daughter was required to drive away with her in his chariot, and Enemas would follow in another chariot and spear the suitor if he caught up with them, which I don't know how that really like changes the prophecy, but I think it just shows, like, asserts the fact that he's dominant as the father. I don't know. But so he did this. He was like, we're going to do it. You know, any suitor, any guy that wants to marry my daughter has to do this. Which, imagine if like today there were challenges in place, like my dad set up a challenge and was like, any guy on Hinge that wants to date my daughter has to do this physical activity and show him, like, prove himself. Like, it's really funny how things have changed. Anyway, so he invented this little competition, but one thing he didn't tell people was the fact that the king's chariot horses that he'd be riding with were actually a present from the god Poseidon, and so therefore they were supernaturally fast. Like, they weren't just any old mortal horse. They had these supernatural powers, so he had a leg up on any of the suitors. Like, he just knew that he was going to win, and he was going to kill anyone. I think the whole premise was that he was just going to kill every suitor. So then there was none left. And then the king would not be killed because, as the legend or the oracle said, he would be killed by his daughter's husband. So he was like, well, if there's no husband, then I won't be killed. So I think that was the whole point of this, which it feels like kind of elaborate. But anyway, so he had these supernatural horses, knowing that it was a losing game for whoever the suitor was in their normal chariot. So he had these supernatural horses. The king's daughter fell in love with a man named Pelops. So Pelops was then entered into this competition because he was a suitor. So before the race, though, Pelops persuaded Enemas, so the king, his charioteer, the guy that was driving the chariot, Myrtilus, to replace the bronze axle pins that were in his chariot with wax ones. So sure, he had these supernatural horses, but he then had a faulty chariot with these wax pins. You know what happens when wax gets hot? It melts. So naturally during the race, the wax melted and the king fell from his chariot and was killed. So Pelops, the suitor, won and ultimately was able to get the king's daughter, even though he killed the king in the process. But I mean, the king was going to kill him, so really, it is kind of fair if you think about it, like, in a weird way. So after his victory, after not being killed by his potential future father-in-law, Pelops organized chariot races as a thanksgiving to the gods and as funeral games in honor of the king in order to be purified of his death. It is said that this funeral race held at Olympia was the beginnings of the Olympic Games, or they were inspired by it. So those are a few of the different mythological roots, or the different myths that are out there that explain why the Olympics are what they are. But historically speaking, the Olympics are believed to have been founded by King Iphitos of Elis. According to ancient records, King Iphitos, along with some other prominent lawgivers and such, sought this other oracle. So separate oracle from the other king's oracle, different oracle, sought an oracle at Delphi to find a solution to end the internal conflicts and wars that were plaguing Greece at this time. The oracle advised them to establish a festival dedicated to Zeus to promote peace and unity among the Greek city-states. So pretty much he was like, okay, there's all this conflict. What are we going to do about it? We're going to throw a party. Like, we're going to throw a party. It's going to save everything, or change everything, rather. There's not going to be so much conflict. People will be happy, and we'll promote all this peace and unity and all of that at this festival party situation dedicated to Zeus. So another thing dedicated to Zeus. So that being said, whatever mythological or historical origin you choose to believe of the things I just told you, it appears that the Olympic Games have always been a part of a religious festival in honor of Zeus. Zeus was always involved in any of the origins you believe. The first recorded Olympic Games were held around 776 BCE, but the consensus among historians is that they were likely going on well before that time. This was just the first recorded Olympic Games. And the ancient games were held in Olympia, a sanctuary site dedicated to Zeus that intended to bring peace and harmony to Greece. Olympia became a central place of worship and athletic competition, attracting participants from across the Greek world. And the games were held every 4 years, like they are now, or an Olympiad, which became a unit of time in historical chronologies. So you might be thinking to yourself, okay, the games are supposed to promote peace. But back in like the ancient Greek times, it kind of feels like things were a bit lawless. Like, yeah, there were laws, but it was like, you know, an eye for an eye, you know, someone steals and they get their hand chopped off, like really stressful times. And I feel like there wasn't like proper policing at the time to make sure that people were staying in their lane and not being dangerous. So how are they going to like get all these people together, like thousands of people in a stadium cheering for different sides and not expect there to be any violence? Like, how is this going to ultimately promote peace if there's an opportunity for a lot of violence to occur? Because, you know, when people are watching sports, they go a little bit berserk, you know? So during the celebration of the games, a sacred truce was declared. Yeah, a literal sacred truce to ensure safe passage of athletes and spectators alike. And some records suggest that there were some games with close to 40,000 spectators. Remember, the goal of the games was to promote peace, so this truce actually allowed for a temporary ceasefire among the often warring Greek city-states. However, the games became more of a political tool used by the city-states to assert dominance over their rival city-states. Politicians would announce political alliances at the games, and in times of war, priests would offer sacrifices to the gods for victory. Either way, this spirit of a truce is still emulated in the games today. The United Nations General Assembly adopts the Olympic truce, quote unquote, ahead of each edition of the modern games. So even though it's not always practiced, there is this kind of air about it, even today, that everyone should set aside, you know, whatever is going on in their respective places, like with regard to other countries, like, you know, political matters, literally, and just like, we're here for the games and that is it. Like, let's set all of our differences aside, all of our drama, all of our treaties, everything chill for now. Although, like I said, people have breached that to make it political, which is inevitable, but ultimately there's supposed to be this Olympic truce. Initially, the Olympics featured a single event, the Stadion race. Stadion with an N at the end, a foot race of about 192 meters, which was the length of the stadium. Around 724 BCE, the Dialos was introduced, which was a race that was the length of two single stadion races. So essentially, it was a double course for foot races in ancient Greece, where the contestants ran down one side of the stadium, turned around a goal, and came back to the starting point. And this is roughly equal to today's 400-meter races. Shortly thereafter that was the introduction of the Dolichos, a long-distance race which was likely comparable to the 1,500-meter or 5,000-meter events that we are familiar with today. And these games were taken very seriously. Starting positions for the races were actually determined by law, and a false start could result in physical punishment. Anyway, so that was kind of the humble beginnings of the different races that were involved. But as we know today, there's much more involved in the Olympics than just running. So eventually a number of other events were added. The pentathlon, which is first up, we have foot race, long jump, discus, and javelin throws, and a wrestling match. So that was the pentathlon, was introduced in 708 BCE. Boxing came in 688 BCE, and chariot racing in 680 BCE. And in 648 BCE, there was this event called a pankration, which was a combination of boxing and wrestling with virtually no rules, which sounds like it would result in death. Like someone would have to die in order for them to win, like, or the other person to win. Interesting to note, but kind of obvious, that participation in the ancient Olympic Games was initially limited to freeborn male citizens of Greece. There were no women's events back then. And this is interesting, actually, that I did not know. Married women were prohibited from attending the competition. Like, they couldn't even go watch their husbands potentially die if they were married. Like, they couldn't go and watch, because apparently it was just like too graphic for a married woman to witness. There is evidence that there were some women's focused events later on. So yeah, we'll leave it at that. But there is a funny element to this, which I'm sure a lot of you are probably aware of if you've ever seen any sort of like drawing or depiction of the ancient Olympic Games. The ancient Greeks competed completely naked. There are actually two competing stories that explain why. One tale explains that this guy named Orsippus was actually the first to run naked in the Stadion race in 720 BCE by accident. Like, he did not intend to run naked. He lost his loincloth, or that like little cloth that like goes over the privates, while he was actively running. So it just like completely fell off. And I guess after that, they were like, well, who needs it? You know, this guy did it. He probably did well, I'm assuming. And so they're like, okay, maybe like aerodynamics of it all, it's actually just helpful to not have anything on. So that was one potential explanation. Another version of the origin story for this is that nudity was actually introduced by the Spartans in 8th century BCE as a show of civility in the face of their Persian enemies, who thought that bearing it all, being naked, was actually commendable. So they were pretty much showing like, hey, we're right there with you. Like, we see you. We in this moment we're cool, you know, we're cool, peace and all. If you guys want to be naked, we'll be naked. Like, that's kind of the second explanation. Either way, naked games became the norm for Greek athletes, who would coat their body in olive oil and then dust themselves in fine sand as a way to regulate body temperature and protect them from the sun. So kind of like primitive sunscreen. Eventually, nudity and the naked form became a symbol of power and strength in Greek culture, and it's reflected in Greek art, etc. So that is kind of a little reasoning as to why they were naked. The Olympics were a pillar of tradition in Greece for nearly a millennium, until the rise of the Roman Empire. In 393 AD, things came to a screeching halt when the Roman Emperor Theodosius I abolished the games. And his reasons were twofold. First, Theodosius I was a devout Christian and sought to establish Christianity as the official religion of the Roman Empire. The Olympic Games, on the other hand, were rooted in pagan traditions and were dedicated to the Greek gods, particularly Zeus. So this wasn't really in line with like his plans to highlight the Christian god and Christian beliefs if there's all this Greek, you know, Greek mythology involved. As part of his efforts to promote Christianity and suppress those pagan practices, Theodosius issued a series of edicts that targeted pagan festivals, rituals, and institutions, including the Olympics. Second, so that's his first reason. Second, during this period, the Roman Empire was facing significant political, social, and economic challenges. The resources and attention of the state were focused on dealing with these issues, and large-scale events like the Olympics would have been seen as an unnecessary spend, an unnecessary event, like doesn't really, I guess, in his eyes, bring people together as much as it should, and a distraction from all of the challenges. So his rule effectively ended the Olympics then and there, and they really and truly ceased to exist again until the 18th and 19th centuries. So there was a long hiatus in there when we don't really know what was going on, you know, with athletes. Like, what were they doing really besides just their normal day-to-day? So fast forward to the Renaissance. So in Europe, we're in Europe now, they began this long fascination with ancient Greek culture during this time, during the Renaissance. And in the 18th and 19th centuries, some nations staged informal sporting and folkloric festivals bearing the name Olympic Games. However, they were kind of just like wannabes, like they're just like trying to mimic the style of how things used to be during Greek times. However, it wasn't until 1892 that a young French baron named Pierre de Coubertin seriously proposed reviving the Olympics as a major international competition that would occur every 4 years, as was customary back in the day. At a conference on international sport in Paris in June of 1894, Coubertin again raised the idea, and the 79 delegates from 9 countries that were there unanimously approved his proposal. I would love to have seen or heard what his pitch was, like how he convinced everyone. I'm sure money had to do with it. Like, I'm sure he got up there and he's like, hey guys, we can make a lot of money, you know, like with this, with like charging tickets. Like, I don't know why I feel like that was like a factor slash, I mean, it like always is. But yeah, regardless of what his argument was, he won and his proposal was approved by the 79 delegates, and the International Olympic Committee was therefore formed, and the first games were planned for 1896 in Athens, the capital of Greece, which makes a lot of sense. It's like, obviously we got to go back to where it all started and kick things off again. So this was in 1896. This new rendition of the games, the modern Olympic Games, looked a bit different than the ancient games. First of all, everyone was fully clothed, but the events looked different as well. In Athens, 280 participants from 13 nations competed in 43 events.
Work takes up most of your time. That's why you should use Stamps.com to save time with your mailing and shipping. Stamps.com will simplify your postage needs and add valuable time back into your workday, so you have flexibility to focus on more important things. Stamps.com can handle your mailing and shipping needs with rates up to 88% off UPS and USPS. Send invoices, checks, certified mail, packages, and anything else you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. If you sell online, connecting with every major marketplace and shopping cart is easy. Plus, you can schedule package pickups through their dashboard and automatically see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers with Stamps.com's Rate Advisor. Add more flexibility to your workday with Stamps.com. Go to Stamps.com/program to sign up for a special offer. No contract, cancel anytime. That's Stamps.com/program.
89% of business leaders say AI is a top priority. The right choice is crucial, which is why teams at one-third of Fortune 500 companies use Grammarly. Grammarly is the right AI assistant for your team. With top-tier security credentials and 15 years of experience in responsible AI, Grammarly is how companies like yours increase productivity while keeping data protected and private. See why 70,000 teams trust Grammarly at grammarly.com/enterprise.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Covering track and field, swimming, gymnastics, cycling, wrestling, weightlifting, fencing, shooting, and tennis. All the competitors were male, and a few of the entrants were tourists who stumbled upon the games and just were allowed to sign up. So they were just like visiting on vacation, and they were like, hey, can I join? can I join the Olympics? Can you imagine if you're just like in Paris right now? And you're just like, hey guys, can I join the Olympics? Like, now obviously there's all these rigorous trials involved and you have to qualify in so many different ways. You like need to be drug tested. Like, there's so many different hoops you have to jump through just to get a spot on the team. Whereas back in the day, you could literally just be like a tourist and
be like, hey guys, can I join? Like literally. The track and field events were actually held at the original stadium, which was built in 330 BC and restored for the 1896 games. And Americans actually won 9 out of 12 of these events back in the 1896 rendition. So while the first modern Olympic Games, the 1896 Games, was a huge success, the next two that happened after that were disastrous, to say the least. Both the second Olympiad, which was in Paris in 1900, and the third Olympiad that was in St. Louis, Missouri in 1904, were held in conjunction with this other event that was going on that had been going on for a long time called the World's Fair. If you guys don't know what the World's Fair is, I might do a whole episode on that because it's actually defunct now, like they don't do it anymore, but it was this gigantic festival fair of sorts, just that was kind of, its sole purpose was to bring everyone together, kind of a unity thing, but to show off each nation's accomplishments. Like there were, it was a fair, but it was pretty much like, look at us, we are from this nation and we did this, and like kind of showing off the accomplishments of each place in a time when there wasn't the internet. Like, you know, now if you want to see like what other countries are up to in terms of like world records and like really amazing technology that they've designed and whatnot, like unless it's classified, you can literally just Google it and see what they're up to. But back in the day, people had to travel and go to the World's Fair and see it all in real life, like different booths and stuff for different countries. And it was just supposed to be this unity moment, but it was huge. Yeah, so that's kind of like in a nutshell what the World's Fair was. But I would do a whole episode on it because there's a lot of very interesting stuff that happened, some like tragic events that happened at these fairs. But so the next two games, the second and the third modern Olympic Games, were held in conjunction, like the same time as the World's Fair. And so because of that, people were like, well, we don't really care that much about the Olympics because, you know, this is kind of like the main event is the World's Fair. And people just treated the sporting events of the Olympics as a sideshow. And so there wasn't a lot of focus on the Olympics. So there was a lot of very disorganized events. The venues weren't very great. And there were no officially agreed upon rules and regulations because, you know, at this time, all these people were, you know, learning how to do all of these different things, like all the different sporting events of the time that were involved in the Olympics in their respective home countries. And so people had different rules. Like there wasn't like an industry standard for like how long of a race is, you know, this one race, like how many meters or like, you know, what equipment do we use for various things, you know, things like that. So while the 1900 Paris Olympics were bad, the next one that was held in St. Louis in 1904 were even worse, rated as possibly the worst Olympic Games in history. And this was actually the first ever games held in the United States. And there were so many problems and disputes during the running of these games. In this particular rendition of the Olympics, the first ever in the US, there were only 15 countries competing because back in those days, the journey to the US from other parts of the world was lengthy and expensive. And the games at that time wasn't even really a competition between nations, but more so a contest between individual amateur sports people. Many top athletes were not able to take part as participants had to find their own way there, pay for their own travel and accommodation expenses themselves. So they ultimately had to be wealthy enough, or just like wealthy period, to be able to travel to the US and like enter themselves, pay for all of their own lodging and everything. Like it was just more so an amateur sporting event. So there were 650 participants in this Olympic Games, and nearly all were men, but there were six women, notably. But less than half of the events had competitors from other countries. It was pretty much just an American college competition with athletes competing for their college teams rather than the Team USA itself. Like it really felt kind of disjointed, and there just like weren't enough people from other countries to make it a real Olympic Games. So the Olympic Games of today spans just about 2 weeks in length. But back in the day, in this 1904 Olympics train wreck that was Missouri, ran for almost 5 months, from July 1st to November 23rd. But like the previous games in Paris, they were considered just an addition to the World Fair, and not all of the events were Olympic ones. The track and field competitions, which were considered to be the main Olympic events, were held over just a few short days, from August 29th to September 3rd. But one event in particular that is still being talked about today was the marathon. Contrary to popular belief, the marathon was actually not one of the foot races that was original to the ancient Olympic Games. The marathon is a modern event that was brought in during the reboot for the Olympic Games in Athens in 1896. So as we know, the marathon today is 26.2 miles. Like, that is the length of a marathon. We all know that, or a lot of us know that. I don't know why I know that. Honestly, I've never run one before, but I just like know that in the back of my head. But the marathon at the St. Louis Games that was on August 30th, 1904, was 24.85 miles long with rough unpaved roads. 32 athletes from four nations started the race, and surprise, surprise, not all of them finished. A few of the runners were recognized athletes who had either won or placed in the Boston Marathon or in the previous Olympic marathons. But the majority of the field was composed of middle distance runners and assorted oddball characters. A man named Fred Lors was one of those. He was an American who actually trained at night because he worked as a bricklayer by day. And Fred earned his spot in the Olympics by placing in a special 5 mile race sponsored by the Amateur Athletic Union. So he simply placed in a simple 5 mile race and he was like included in the Olympics. Other noteworthy contenders included two men from the Tswana tribe of South Africa, the first Black Africans to ever participate in the modern Olympics, and they were in St. Louis as part of the South African World's Fair exhibit. So like I said, they were just, I said this before, that a lot of tourists or just people that were, that just happened to be there, were just included in the Olympics, which I think is honestly great. Just kind of chaotic in a great way, I think. So then there was Felix Carvajal, a Cuban national and former mailman who raised money to come to the U.S. by demonstrating his running prowess through Cuba, once trekking the length of an island. So he raised money by like just doing crazy runs in Cuba. He really wanted to come to the U.S. and participate. And upon his arrival to New Orleans, he reportedly lost all of his money in a dice game and had to walk and hitchhike to St. Louis. A 5'1" man, he presented a slight but striking figure at the starting line, attired in a white long-sleeve shirt, long dark pants, a beret, and a pair of street shoes. So Felix had style. But that's not the kind of outfit you'd think someone would run 26.2 miles or 24.8 or whatever it was back then. And legend has it that one fellow Olympian saw his outfit, saw Felix's getup, and took pity on him, or just said to himself, like, that's not going to work for this guy. Like, I feel bad for him. And found a pair of scissors and cut his trousers at the knee. Was like, you need shorts. Like, here we go. At precisely 3:03 p.m., a very random time, but 3:03 p.m., the men started their journey. The weather was extremely hot and humid, and like I mentioned previously, most of the course was unpaved on these dusty roads that kicked up tremendous amounts of dirt and debris into the runners' eyes and lungs. The course had 7 hills varying from 100 to 300 feet high, some with brutally long ascents, and in many places, cracked stone was strewn across the roadway, creating perilous footing. The men had to constantly dodge crosstown traffic, delivery wagons, railroad trains, trolley cars, and people walking their dogs. So it wasn't really as organized as like the races that we see today, like even like biking races, the Tour de France, like things like that. It's like they literally had to like skirt around people walking their dogs. Like, that's just funny to me. At 24.85 miles, it wasn't quite the 26.2 that we know today. And that's because, quote, this was more like cooking than civil engineering. Race directors designed their courses by a sense of feel, not by a recipe. So kind of metaphoric here, but they were like, this feels right. Let's just like make it 24.85. Like this point here to that point there, it just like looks right. It tastes good, you know, like in the cooking sense. It's like, we're not going to follow a recipe. That's kind of how they were doing things back then. They just like felt like making it that distance, and that was that. There was only one spot where athletes could officially secure fresh water. 12 miles from the start of the race. James Sullivan, the chief organizer of the Games back in 1904, wanted to minimize fluid intake to test the limits and effects of purposeful dehydration. Super fun for the runners, but that sounds like absolute torture, like running 12 miles without even a sip of water. Whew. So you might be wondering how it all went down. Like, how did these guys fare? Because this actually happened. Like, this isn't a myth. This actually occurred. So, like, how did it all go for them? And you honestly, you can't make this stuff up, guys. It's almost comical. So let's go through all of the different guys and like what happened to them. So Hicks, who was an experienced runner from Massachusetts, led the 32 starters from the gun. Like, he was the fastest at the start. William Garcia of California nearly became the first fatality of an Olympic marathon when he collapsed on the side of the road some 8 miles from the finish. The dust had coated his esophagus and ripped his stomach lining, causing serious hemorrhaging. Lorden, one of the Americans, suffered a bout of vomiting and just simply gave up. Len Tao, one of the South African participants, was chased a mile off course by a wild dog. So back to Felix Carvajal, our favorite Cuban man who was wearing a crazy billowing shirt and beret, and one of the other runners had to cut his pants in half so he could run properly, was actually making good time in the race, even though he paused for multiple different reasons. He was just like stopping constantly to chat with people, even though he couldn't really speak a lot of English. Like, he was just like pausing to chat. On one occasion, he stopped at a car, saw that the people in the car were eating peaches, and asked for one, but they refused to give him a peach. So he just stole two of them and kept running and ate them as he ran. A bit further down the course, Felix stopped at an orchard and snacked on some apples. Like, he was just ravenous. He snacked on some apples, which turned out to be rotten. So then he got a stomach ache, like stomach cramps from that rotten apple. So then he just laid down and took a nap. Yeah, he took a nap in the middle of an Olympic marathon. So another one of the leaders in the race at first was this guy named Lors, and he was doing great, but then all of a sudden got these really severe cramps. So he hitched a ride in a car for about 9 miles, planning to drop out of the race. Hicks, the runner from Massachusetts that I mentioned a little bit ago, took the lead again after Lors dropped out. And he struggled with the heat and exhaustion. So his trainers, like the people that were kind of banking on him to win, did what they could to help him keep going. So they administered a mixture of this stimulant called strychnine and brandy. So mixed that together, gave it to him, like alcohol, literally brandy, alcohol, and a stimulant. Like, this would not be legal today. Administered a mixture of this and then also gave him egg whites. And this was actually the first recorded instance of drug use in the modern Olympics, which had no rules about performance-enhancing drugs at the time. Today, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention describes the stimulant that Hicks was consuming as a, quote, strong poison that is primarily used as a pesticide, particularly to kill rats. Not surprisingly, this concoction, the stimulant and the brandy mixed together, combined with the grueling conditions, nearly led to his collapse. After recovering from his cramps and enjoying an 11-mile car ride, like literally cheated, Lors, so back to the other guy that was initially ahead of Hicks, but then he got in the car and so then Hicks got in front of him, Lors re-entered the race near the stadium and crossed the finish line first. Initially declared the winner, Lors was later disqualified when people found out that he had gotten this ride in a car for 11 miles and just like got out of the car and was like, here I am, guys, I'm gonna cross the finish line. And he claimed that it was a joke, but the officials were not amused. Despite severe exhaustion and the dangerous stimulants that were given to him, the literal pesticides that were injected into him, Hicks managed to stagger across the finish line supported by his trainers. He was declared the official winner with a time of 3 hours, 28 minutes, and 53 seconds. So there you have it, quite the race. The first place winner disqualified because they found out he took a car. And the actual first place winner was doped up on performance-enhancing drugs, or maybe not even performance-enhancing. He was literally like given pesticides and brandy and egg whites or yolks or whatever it was. So a lot of unusual things happened at the 1904 St. Louis Olympics. So we have this marathon that went awry with someone literally cheating, and then, you know, all the stuff that I just mentioned involved, the fact that it literally lasted for 5 months, the fact that only really a few countries participated, that was definitely strange. Like, I mean, obviously it's supposed to be this competition that involves all of the world, and it was really only a few countries. That was strange. Also, the fact that it spanned for 5 months, like it took 146 days for them to get through from start to finish. And some other interesting things, there was actually a sporting event for tug of war. So tug of war was included as part of the track and field competition. So that was like a literal Olympic sport, was tug of war, which I haven't played since I was literally like 12 years old. And then finally, there actually was a competition for women. I think I mentioned that there was like 6 women that competed in the Olympics in 1904, and women only competed in one official event. Out of the nearly 100 sports at the 1904 Olympics, archery was the only sport that women were allowed to participate in, and involved 6 contestants. Yeah, a whopping 6 women, like I said, were involved in the 1904 Olympics, which is crazy. And 5 of those 6 were actually part of Ohio Cincinnati Archers Club. So they were like a part of a club, 5 of them, and then the one lone other woman. 45-year-old Lita Howell, the nation's undisputed top lady archer, coasted to the gold medal in both the double Columbia and double national rounds. So yeah, that was kind of, it was like probably pretty anticlimactic for them. Like, oh, we get one event and we all kind of know each other and we're from America, like pretty much everybody. But don't be fooled. There was an unofficial event that women participated in during the Olympics, and that was boxing. But as I said, it wasn't considered an official event. So although women did participate in boxing to some extent, and there's like records of this happening, they weren't awarded medals or really taken seriously. And amazingly, the 1904 exhibition in St. Louis would be the last time women boxed at the Olympics for 108 years because the competition wasn't revived until the 2012 Summer Games in London. So interesting, right? Anyway, that was the train wreck that was the 1904 Olympics in Missouri. Let's talk about medals. So interestingly, at the first Summer Olympics in Greece in 1896, only 2 medals were actually awarded, a silver medal to the winner and a bronze medal to the runner-up. In 1900, at the Paris Olympics, mainly cups or trophies were handed out, but the winners of some of the events were presented with a rectangular-shaped gilt silver medal. In 1904, 1908, and 1912, the winners were awarded solid gold medals, smaller in size to the medals of today, but today's medals are not made of solid gold. They're actually made of approximately 93% silver, 6% copper, and just over 1% gold. I didn't know that. Like, I don't know why I expected them to be like solid gold. I'm really surprised by that. Like, 1904, 1908, 1912, the winners were given solid gold medals. Like, smaller than the ones today, but still, that is solid gold. Like, that's worth a lot of money. I mean, not to say that a medal today, like an actual Olympic medal, wouldn't be worth a fortune, but if you think about just like the metallic nature of that back in the day. Anyway. And honestly, the second and third Olympics, you know, the one that happened in 1894 was great, went off without a hitch, supposedly, like from what I've read. 1900 Olympics in Paris and the 1904 Olympics in St. Louis were not great for the PR of the Olympics. People were like, I don't know about this whole Olympics thing. Like back then, it was not the event that it is today. People were very skeptical about it and thought that it was honestly more comical than serious, you know, in showing off how athletic people are and their achievements and whatnot. And so it honestly took a lot of time for the Olympics to blossom into what it is today. People taking it seriously, people, you know, not having to pay their own way to compete. Like that was honestly a crazy tidbit from this story. The fact that really only wealthy people could compete in the Olympics for some time, even in like the 1900s, because they just were paying their own way to compete. It was kind of like an amateur sporting event for a little while until it became what it is today, of course. And so, yeah, those are some fun facts about the Olympics and how they came to be what they are today. I hope that this episode kind of pumped you up for the Olympics. I'm very excited myself to watch it. And now you have a better appreciation of, you know, for where it all started over 2,000 years ago. So be on the lookout for olive branches, the not so gold, gold medals, and ceremonies reminiscent of ancient Greece. It's truly very special to know the origin of these traditions. So thank you guys for listening to this episode of Found Objects. I hope you guys enjoyed. And remember, things aren't always as they appear. Goodbye. This episode was produced, edited, and told by Katie Bellotti. Research by Sarah Schilling. Podcast artwork by Siri Devlin. Follow us on Instagram at Found Objects Podcast. Tune in next Wednesday for a new episode. Goodbye.
The NFL playoffs are better with FanDuel because right now new customers can bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets. Guaranteed. That's $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. FanDuel, an official sportsbook partner of the NFL. 21 plus and present in select states. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. Bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets which expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.